This is Radio City Talk. Rock, sport and talk for Liverpool.
Now, full time on Radio City Talk.
Afternoon, 2 minutes after five. Do you say evening? Yeah, you do when it's pitch black outside. I'm Connor Phillips in the Radio City Talk Tower. This is full time. And for the next 90 minutes, it's like a football match thrown into the middle of a radio show. We are all in the game. And this evening, joined by Neil Atkinson. Beg your pardon, not Neil Atkinson. Neil Sang, football agent. John Gibbons from the Anfield Rap. And I've got Paddy with me from the Blue Room. Paddy, first of all, right, seeing you through the glass there a couple of minutes ago, you're looking a bit down.
Yeah.
And sullen and a bit depressed with the word Paddy Boylan, come on. This, how can we get some positivity back into your life after Watford 3, Everton 2?
I think the best way to get any kind of positivity back from an Evertonian perspective would be to get some kind of result against Arsenal on Tuesday evening, and then hopefully that kind of result would build a tad of momentum. Let's say it wouldn't be a heap of momentum, but a tad of momentum in anticipation of Monday night's derby. But if we go into detail in the game, then of course it's going to be slightly depressing, because Watford 3, Everton 2 wasn't the best of games from a Blues perspective, shall we say.
Have you ever seen one of those, like, it's like Murder, She Wrote? Do you ever watch Murder, She Wrote with Jessica Fletcher, Angela Lansbury?
I've not, actually, no.
Hold on a second. John Gibbons from the Anfield Rap, have you watched Murder, She Wrote?
I love all that, mate.
Yeah. Do you know the guy who does the murdering in the end? They always find out. He's always wearing a pair of gloves that you've just brought into the studio. Now, let me just describe the gloves that John Gibbons from the Anfield Rap was wearing. It clearly... Christmas present?
Yeah, they were.
They were a Christmas present. I don't think you actually physically go into a shop and say, excuse me, can I have those murdering gloves? You know, the one that they have in Murder, She Wrote. So it's almost like... It's like, I don't want to put them in my hand because I may be framed for a murder down the road. So they're black. They're the blackest as black can be, and they're almost like a shiny leather. So it either means that A, they were a Christmas present, or B, the Anfield Rap's doing better than we thought it was.
They're very much a Christmas present. It's that time of year where I dig around and see what gloves and hats I've got from last year, and it's never as many as you feel like it should be. But I found these were a Christmas present last year from a dear loved one, so they've done the job so far.
Right, your dear loved one isn't Angela Lansbury from Murder, She Wrote, no? Okay, just checking. Jessica Fletcher, if you're listening, I know she's a big fan of the show.
She loves it.
We salute you this afternoon, into this evening indeed. Do you know what, I always end up going for ski gear, right? I like to ski occasionally, yeah. Right? I'm not a very good skier, but I go down on the cheap ski holiday and I can't find the gloves and I go, oh, it's freezing. Oh. I'll just dig into the ski bag here and I end up looking like a cross between the Marshmallow Man and do you know those fluorescent fitness gurus used to be on GMTV in the 80s?
Yeah.
Because all your ski gear is that colour. It's like, what am I even doing
here? At least you're very visible.
I am, if I'm old. That's why I came in black today. Well, look, tell you what, Let's break down what happened with Everton over the last couple of days. John, we'll talk about Liverpool, obviously, after 5:30. We'll break into some of the other Premier League stuff. Everything from Leicester. Charlie Austin's gone now for a while. The Champions League draw. We'll talk Chelsea. We'll talk Arsenal as well, to name but a few. But, Paddy, very straightforward question for you. Where do Everton go from here?
That's not a straightforward question, is it? I think that's incredibly difficult to know what to...
It's straightforward that I don't have to back it up with any questions. And I can put my feet up here and listen to your answer.
Okay. I think as Evertonians, we've been a bit guilty in recent weeks of looking to January as the kind of be-all and end-all. And what I mean there is the squad at the moment isn't good enough. Koeman's not getting them playing in the way that he himself wants. And we, as fans, are looking at January is an opportunity to remedy that, if you like. The problem is that January is never the ideal time to bring in these players because they take a while to bed in. And you get the sense that top clubs, at least, won't want to part with their best players. So it's a difficult one as far as Everton are concerned. I see, it may be sounding overly negative, but I see an awful lot of problems with this Everton team. I was after the game, I was having to think about what we do well. What the identity of the team is on the pitch. And there seems to me to be no distinct style. There's a lack of cohesion, there's an absence of leadership, and the spine of the team really isn't strong enough. Koeman's comments after the game and in the presser this morning basically mirrored what I'm saying here. He said that the team's not strong enough, they're not capable enough of withstanding aerial bombardments, and that's a problem, isn't it?
John Gibbons from the Anfield Wrap. Paddy used a great word there, that it's an opportunity for Everton to build. But if you watch Everton and you watch Paddy's Twitter feed alone, right, it's not an opportunity, more so a be-all and end-all. They need to fix this, and they need to fix this soon.
You know, definitely. I'd just like to point out, this first time I met Paddy, and he's far too handsome to be an Evertonian. I think something's gone wrong there somewhere. That's not the gnarled faces I see shouting at me from the home end of Goodison Park.
There must be some Irish blood. You've got a slight tinge of ginger in your hair there.
Yeah. Well, my brother's ginger as well, so this confirms it. Yeah.
With Everton, it just feels like a little bit of a mess, doesn't it? And I think that's a bit of an issue for them, really, because Paddy's talking there about strengthening in January. They'll undoubtedly try to, but it's sort of, where do you start, really? It's where do you start, because there's issues kind of all over the pitch, really, and it doesn't seem, you know, we're going to go on to talk about Liverpool, but it's quite clear what Liverpool's problems are at the moment, really, whereas for Everton, you think, well, you know, you make an argument to strengthen all over the pitch, even up front, because, they've obviously got a great striker, but there's only one of them. And so all over the pitch, really, you could make arguments to kind of strengthen. And so it's when you've got so much to do, and when they seem to have a bit of a lack of identity at the moment, you know, and when Everton have been doing well, you've always been very sure about what they're about. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Whether that's been, you know, under different managers, it's been different things, but you've been very sure about what they're about. And at the moment, I'm not really sure what it is even Koeman's trying to do at the moment, and I'm sure he is. But, you know, it's a real problem for Everton, and you don't know where to start. And if you were sort of in charge of recruitment, and obviously they've had changes there, and I'm sure Steve Walsh is looking at it thinking, well, I wouldn't mind strengthening everywhere, but, you know, it's, well, there's financial issues with that, of course. And also, you know, as Paddy says, you know, not everyone wants to sell. Players don't necessarily want to sell. Well, sorry, football clubs don't necessarily want to sell.
It's perfect that we have a football agent in the studio this evening. Neil Sang is with us this evening. Sangy, so we just said Everton could see the January transfer window as an opportunity to strengthen. But having spoken on this show over the last 3 weeks, we thought, well, they'll probably need 4 points out of Man United and Watford. They've ended up with one. Does the January transfer window become more and more important to Everton, or is it, as you as a football agent, a bit of a white elephant?
Possibly both. I always think the January transfer window is one of them where you look and you think, what are you playing for, basically? Because you can go and spend money in the Premier League like it's gone out of fashion. Now, I can tell you that Christmas shopping for the missus, you can spend and spend and spend, and it's a killer. But there's got to be, my point is, there's got to be an end purpose to it. I think if Everton were really in touch with Champions League, and I don't think they will, because I think the top four it'll be between five teams. I think Everton are just behind that. You've got to look at what is your goal. I think they will strengthen. I think they'll sign a few. And I think that their ultimate aim would be to get a team that's got low to mid 20-year-old players in there that can maybe grow and develop together. I think they need 2 or 3 years of real stability. I think if you looked across the park, Liverpool have now arguably got a squad that could be together for the next 3 or 4 years. And guess what? It's only going to get better and better and better. So you would like to think that Everton would do the same in terms of the age, and yeah, of course they've got to up the quality as well, because I think there's players there that Evertonians think, well, yeah, all right, yeah, but not good enough. So there always has to be that purpose, Connor, is what I'm saying. And I think the plan, Steve Walsh and Koeman's plan, will probably be evolving even as we speak, because don't forget they're really new to each other, so they've both got to understand each other. They've got to then tap in and manage upwards to the board and the owners. So you've got to, there's loads of little things that have to fall into place before you spend money.
As an agent, right, I'm not going to put you under too much pressure here.
Please do. No, come on. You know me. I'm always honest on this show. Well, pressure me.
Obviously, you're going to have some business to do in December or in January as well, the transfer window. Does it just become a window where you see, I'm sure there are unscrupulous agents in football, do you see them rubbing their hands going, right, how much money can I make here? Because one thing we know about you is that you are about player development, you're about attitude and stuff like that there, and you're a welcome addition to the world of football. But can you see people starting to look around corners and go, hey, kid, you're not getting a game. You're not getting a game. Come with me, I'll sort you. I'll throw you in here. £2 million deal. He pockets a few quid. Are we starting to see that with January, and how careful do Everton have to be that they don't do that?
Yeah, no, definitely, kind of good points. There are agents like that, and you know what? It comes down to supply and demand. I suppose it depends how you're wired. if you're a businessman, I mean, you know, where you are now, if somebody was to say to you, listen, come and work for, you know, a competitor radio station and it's double your salary, and, you know, you've got to you've got to let a few people down. At this station, you go. I suppose it's just fact of life. Where football differs is from any other commercial transaction is that as fans we think we own the players and we think we own the club and we've got a right to say and we don't apply the same models to our own careers as we maybe do to a footballer's career and to an agent's career. So it's supply and demand. If an agent can get more money for his player and therefore himself, he will do. Where I strongly disagree with the way the business is done by a lot of agents is that it goes, instead of talking about agents making loads of money from Everton, because Everton have a choice. If an agent says, my client wants X, Y, and Z, they can say, no, we'll give them ABC. If you don't want ABC, see ya. Fair dues. So Everton have a choice to say no. What I disagree with is, for example, and I'm just giving a for example here, is if an agent comes into a player at Everton who's considered a star player, who's considered a player who won't be churned, and says, this club's going nowhere, son. We need to get you out of there. You're way better than that. I mean, what are you doing here? You should be playing in the elite of the elite, blah, 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 blah. That's when I strongly disagree. There needs to be, there's always an honest and open dialogue to have with that. And if I just pick a player from anywhere, a Lukaku, say, I would disagree strongly with his agent saying, you're way better than their son, so let's leave. If an agent's bringing a player to Everton and he wants more money and Everton want to pay it, that's just a commercial transaction, supply and demand, fair play.
Paddy, you're looking to fill holes, obviously, between now and January. Yep. I'm not going to ask you to take players out. I'm just going to ask you to put players in. What holes do you need filled? And I'm just looking at here, 5:15. We only have about an hour and 15 minutes left of the show.
What are you saying, Connor?
So just bear with me a wee second. So what holes do Everton need to fill, having won one game in the last 10?
Well, an awful lot. To be honest, I think you could go right through that team and make improvements, starting with the goalkeeper. We mentioned last week Stecklenburg's role in the Man United goal. I thought he was suspect again for one of the Watford efforts over the weekend. So I would be looking in to bring in a new number one, even though I imagine Koeman won't. That's just my inclination.
Why?
He seems to be fairly happy with Stecklenburg. He used him at Southampton. He seems to trust him. It might be misguided trust, actually, if you look at the way he's performing on the pitch at the moment. Koeman's already got some favourites in this Everton squad that seem unshakable in their status in the starting 11. And Stecklenburg would be one of those, in my mind at least. They definitely need another centre-back, a younger, fitter, faster replacement for Jagielka, a partner for Ashley Williams, and then somebody like Morgan Schneiderlin. Again, we mentioned them last week. Somebody in the centre of midfield to partner Idrissa Gueye, bring a bit more solidity to the midfield, and then up front.
It's funny you say about Schneiderlin, because I think that's where you can get value in January, yeah. And I think where, you know, people say January is a difficult time to buy, and it can be, but where Liverpool have had success is taking players. Good players from top clubs who aren't getting a game.
Yeah.
And Daniel Sturridge and Phil Coutinho both fitted into that, really, and they just weren't going. And the clubs were kind of, they were keen to sell, really, I think. So if you look at Schneiderlin, you know, he'd be on decent wages where he is, and, you know, he's kind of not featuring there. So I think that there is opportunities there for Everton.
Probably won't have to move house. Realistically, yeah, he won't. No, that's a huge part to play in it. Because he's the upheaval, obviously, from Southampton the whole way up to here. It's only down the M62. Yeah. I drive it pretty much every day myself. So it's
well, not you cost you.
Ah, me and Morgan. Ah, oh, totally. Fresh. This is brilliant. Morgan, tell you what, you have to split the diesel with me. I'm going to ask a question here, and I didn't think anyone would expect me to ask it when we talked last week. How well did Gerard Deulofeu play? I thought he was excellent.
You
may think something different.
Did he?
I thought from the minute go, he got on the ball, he put defenders under pressure, he took the ball into the corner where he does a lot of damage, he whipped many balls in. Granted, not a lot of people got in the end of them. Paddy Boylan from the Blue Room, you're not allowed to start the answer to this one here. You have to let these two gentlemen speak first, because he's got smoke coming out of his ears in the studio at the minute. Lads, what do you reckon?
I thought he played well.
I thought he was probably one of the better players on the pitch after all the issues with him over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I thought he played well. It's a while since I've seen him play well, really. He's become a bit of a forgotten man for me, really. It's like, oh yeah, remember him type thing, you know what I mean? He was kind of the great hope at one point, wasn't he? But I thought he played well. I thought, you know, behind the striker, who obviously gets the two goals, I thought he was Everton's most dangerous player. I thought he's the one. And as you say, looking to get on the ball, and that's what I like to see from attacking players. You know, attacking players with that talent is sometimes, you know, you can drift in and out of games, and sometimes, you know, you could have one good moment and you don't see them for 10 minutes. I enjoyed watching him demanding the ball, really, and coming and looking for it. I think that's what he should be doing, because, you know, it is up to him playing in these attacking roles to, you know, to make that happen. So I thought he played well.
See, Paddy's going to give me an answer in a second, but subconsciously when I asked a couple of seconds ago where we need to fill holes, he didn't have any problems with De La Feo. So maybe subconsciously he thought he played well. Sangi, football agent to the stars and beyond, what do you reckon? I thought he played well, but he's had a lot of hassle, a lot of negative comments about him over the weeks, and I thought it was probably his best game for Everton so far.
Yeah, but when you talk about Gerard De La Feo, you think about him flying past people, you think about him creating, having shots, scoring goals, etc. He didn't do too much of that, so I judge him on that in terms of his attacking threat. I didn't think it was mega. I thought, but again, his intention was there, so I'll give you that. But the thing, and this is probably surprising about him, and I wouldn't want to say this, I think this should be a stock thing. He had a go. He looked like he was trying to. He had that little bit of beef with Kapue, or Kapu, however you say it. He had that little bit of snap, and I think he needs that. I think he needs to show a little bit of that. I think that's the type of thing that keeps him in the team. And then I would judge him on what's his best look like. His absolute best is easily good enough for Everton, in my opinion. Yeah. When he's on, he could be a really, really good player. I don't think he's ever going to be a Coutinho, but I think he's a really, really good player who could play for a top six Premier League side. So I wouldn't say I was blown away, but I would say he was one of the positives, if there were any, from the from the game.
Thankfully, we have about only a minute before we have to go to the break. So, Paddy, you have to condense this if you can, ever so slightly. De La Feo, I thought he had one of his better games for Everton over the weekend.
To be honest, football is a game of opinions, and I actually do really disagree, just because I thought his end product was poor. The amount of times Everton hit the keeper with crosses, to me, was just not good enough.
And that's what he's paid for, Paddy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said for him getting on the front foot, but he is supremely gifted. I think he's as talented a footballer as we've got at Everton. If you watch him, any of the training videos, he is the one putting free kick after free kick into the top corner. He's so talented. He was the best player in his age group in La Masia, and I think we can expect quite a lot more from him. He's the guy that's going to have to step up in Balassi's absence.
How well did he do over the weekend? Give him a mark out of 10 if you can.
Five.
Ooh. Oh, that's a bit harsh.
If you hit the keeper with every cross, as he did, you get a 5.
Okay. You're allowed your views as well. 0151 708 1059. That's the voice of Paddy Boylan from the Blue Room. He's an Everton blogger and writer as well. I'm joined by John Gibbons from the multi award winning Anfield Rap. And by the way, congratulations. Yeah, another award, radio show, sports radio show of the year. Mm-hmm. We're lovely. It's beautiful to be able to host the Anfield Rap here on Radio City Talk every single Friday evening from 6:30. And I think a collective round of applause if we can.
Yeah, well done. Thank you very much.
Well deserved.
Doesn't allow him to sit in my seat though, Connor. So well, can't believe that.
If you'd come in on time, then you'd be able to get whatever seat you want. Right, we are back in the Champions League this in the next couple of weeks, but the Champions League draw has been made. Everything from Man City taking on Monaco, Sevilla, Leicester, oh, it's a gimme, Bayern Munich, Arsenal. So quick question for you lads, right? Because it is Champions League week, I suppose we'll talk about it a lot this week, specifically on the show. We'll set it up before we head towards it next year. There are only 4 players who have won consecutive Champions League titles. Okay?
Players
who have won consecutive Champions League titles. And every single one of them did it with 2 separate clubs. Okay? Champions, who are they? 0151 708 1059. You can get your views in. Give Christian a buzz. He'll field your call. Give me a shout at Radio City Talk. And I can see the wheels turning. The hamster's falling off the aforementioned wheels. Right, we will talk about this more right here in Radio City Talk. We'll talk about the last 15 minutes for Everton. Any positives to take out of that? What about the ball over the top? Is going old school one of the best ways to get a goal in this league? And then we'll talk Liverpool and the rest of the Premier League teams very shortly.
This is Full Time Time. Radio City Talk.
We are all in the game. I'm Connor Phillips, and we're here until 6:30 this evening. Right, the question for you this afternoon, because the Champions League draw has been made, everything from, let me see, City taking on Monaco, Manchester City that is, Sevilla taking on Leicester, and Bayern Munich against Arsenal. There are only four players who have won consecutive Champions League titles, and to give you a little bit of a hint, every single one of these four players won the Champions League with two separate clubs. Right, so there's four here. How are you going? What are you thinking? And what have you got in your head?
I'm looking at the Inter Barcelona of the late 2000s, and I'm thinking Samuel Eto'o.
So he was in what side?
He was in the Barcelona side, 09, and then he went to Inter 2010, I think.
Do you think he won Champions League in both those teams?
I do, yeah.
John Gibbons from the Anfield Rap. Would you like me to tell you whether you're right or not?
Yes, please, mate.
I've been really harsh on you in the last couple of weeks, so I think I really have to drop the shoulders a little bit. I was listening back to the show last week and I was going, oh, I'm a horrible man. So I am going to say Samuel Eto'o won the Champions League with Barcelona and also Real, also Inter Milan, so you're absolutely right. Hey. That is one of the players who's absolutely
in consecutive years.
Consecutive years, that's the whole point of the question. I asked, said it earlier on, said it again when we come back there, and said it to you during the break as well when you went, Connor, are you sure it's consecutive years? That's the whole point in the question, right? So Paddy on fire this evening. Yeah. So there are only four players who have won consecutive Champions League titles. One of them is Samuel Eto'o with Barcelona and Inter Milan. Let me check the Twitter machine here. Well played, Neil Sinclair. Well done, young sir. He's got them all right. Well, good use of Google quite in the evening. But the lads aren't allowed on Google. I always think anyone who gets them that right that quickly and spells the names absolutely bang on potentially could be Google. But listen, I don't want to be disrespectful to our listeners, but well done, Neil, if you got it right. Or indeed, if you use Google well. Anyway, let's have a quick chat as we continue to talk about Everton. We've got 3 or 4 minutes left, then we're going to do Liverpool after the sport at 6:30. Conceding from set pieces is a Liverpool trait, surely?
Also an Everton trait, if you look at Martinez's teams over the past few years. The overall is just a lack of height. If you look at them, there's nobody really commanding in the air.
Morey over six?
Yeah, but he attacks the ball well in the opposition penalty area, but then positionally in our box, everything seems to go to pot. So we thought Ashley Williams was going to come in and resolve this, and he's culpable for at least one of the goals. The first one for Okaka, maybe the second one as well for Prodl. So that's still a recurring problem, and until Koeman brings in his own centre-backs, maybe Lamine Kone, who they were after over the summer, that's going to continue to undermine the season, I feel. And then, as well, if you look at the last kind of 15-20, the formation
John
change.
John Gibbons, get off your phone.
I'm just trying to sort it. I'm moving out.
Sorry,
here.
No phones allowed out when we're doing the question. Paddy, I do apologise.
No, again, as with Man United, the formation changed, induced a kind of rally at the end. Perhaps happened far too late for my liking. And a Valencia went on up front with Lukaku and in effect made the space.
It's
for
all right, wasn't
he played well. I'm not a huge Valencia fan, but he at the very least, he dragged a few of the defenders away from Lukaku, and I think that's why Rom had so much space for that header at the end.
Right, I'm going to ask you, all three of you, a question about Everton. Give me a succinct answer and the reason why you give the answer you're going to give. All right, so I'm going to ask, are Everton in a better place now than they were under Roberto Martinez? Remember, they've won 1 in 10. John Gibbons, what's your answer and why?
I don't think they are, no, because I don't think they've got a clear understanding of what they're about, what they want to do, and I don't think there's an obvious way out of it. I always thought under Martinez you could see where they needed to improve and see certain things that they needed to do better. I think under Koeman it just feels like a little bit of a mess at the moment.
Neil Sang, football agent.
I would say yes, because I think Roberto Martinez had in his head that he was going to play one way, and it ultimately became an unsuccessful way. One swallow doesn't make a summer. You have a really good finish, and then all of a sudden you keep going, and then Insanity's doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results, and that's what he did. Koeman, I think, will change and adapt. I think he's a forward thinker. He's got tons and tons of experience from all these jobs to draw on. So I think Koeman will get it right. I know there's been calls on Twitter so early already for the club to make a change, which I think is preposterous. So I just think I think they're in a much better position. And of course they've got Steve Walsh as his trusted aide now, and his knowledge knows no bounds. So way better position.
Paddy Boylan, just before I ask you, West Brom, Watford and some small team called Manchester United currently sit above you in the table at the moment. Are you in a better shape now than you were under Roberto Martinez?
Yeah, I think we are, but it's only marginal. And the reason I say that is because I think we, in Idrissa Gueye and Ashley Williams, we have at least strengthened the core of the team slightly. There's still room for improvement, but that's a step forward in my head at least. And I think, as Neil's just alluded to then, the fact that they've got Steve Walsh in means that recruitments in January probably will be good. I see some players that could come in straight away at Everton, like Morgan Schneiderlin, and improve us, and I think that will happen.
Would love your views on this as well. 01517 08 1059. Remember, get yourself onto Twitter at Radio City Talk. We're looking for the four players. There's only four players in the world that have won consecutive Champions League titles in the week that the Champions League draw has been made. Get on, let me know what you're thinking, and we'll do more after the sport with Joe Norman.
Full time with Connor Phillips, with the heating and bathroom centre. From boiler to complete bathroom installation, they do it all.
It's Radio City Talk. We are all in the game. It's like a football match stuffed inside the middle of a football game, just the way, a middle of a radio show, just the way you would stuff your turkey in and around Christmas. And speaking of turkeys, all three turkeys join me this afternoon. Hey. John Gibbons from the Anfield Rap, Neil Sang, football agent, and Paddy Boylan from the Blue Rim, Liverpool and Everton podcasters, writers and bloggers respectively. And in the middle, we have kind of like the umpire of things. So a couple of minutes ago, I asked you about this. There are only four players who have won consecutive Champions League titles. We've got Samuel Eto'o from Barcelona and Inter Milan. Good shout, Paddy. Sangi did have a point during the sport there, and I asked him to redress that point during the show, because I listened to myself last week, right? Because I'm the type of player, radio presenter who listens to himself. I'm really that self-absorbed.
Just want to improve, don't you?
Just want to improve. And I thought it was too harsh on you. Okay, so I'm allowing you to...
I wasn't feeling the harshness. Maybe I'm resilient, I don't know, but I wasn't feeling it, Connor.
Right, so what were you saying during the news there?
I said somebody's moved from Juventus in 96 to Dortmund in 97, definitely.
I think the term
so
was...
So I think it's somebody around there, so we've got to think of Italian internationals.
The term was... Nobody would ever move from Juventus to Borussia Dortmund. One man did.
Did I say that, Gibbo?
No.
One man did, and that's just another clue I'm giving
you. And
there's
another one.
Is he from the Czech Republic?
I don't think so. Let me see. I'll have to Google that one. I don't think so. Right?
Someone like that, yeah.
It's a few years back. No, he's not. Right.
The Nedved player.
Let's get stuck into the Liverpool chat here. I don't know what to say. Now, what kind of... I don't want to gang up on Paddy, because I have to, at this point in the show, point out the fact that I'm a Liverpool fan as well. So I always like to remain balanced here. But from a Liverpool perspective, I watched the game after I was working up at Old Trafford yesterday. All right, feel free to boo. And straight after, I ended up watching the Liverpool game amongst Manchester United fans in a Manchester United bar. It was very interesting. And there were a few of them making, obviously, disparaging comments, because, you know, every football fan makes disparaging comments about another football fan. But they made some really good points. And one of them that struck me was, this has got to feel like a loss for Liverpool. And John Gibbons, first of all, from the Anfield Rap, I was dozing off in bed last night. Genuinely, this is how much it was in my head. And it really did feel like a loss for Liverpool.
It's drop points. It feels very much like drop points, doesn't it? Sometimes a draw can feel like, you know, point games.
But there's a difference between like drop points and it feeling like a loss.
It didn't feel like a loss to me. It just felt like we dropped further behind, and that's what's frustrating, because obviously Chelsea get the win, Arsenal get the win, and, you know, you're looking to try. We need to claw points back from them, and instead, you know, the gap's got a little bit greater, and then that's what's annoying, really, because it was a couple of games where you were targeting 6 points. Let's be honest, and 6 points they should have got. They led in both the games, and it just concerns you, because it's concerns that you had about the team that kind of went away when they were doing really well, but never completely kind of went out your mind. And that's, you know, concerns about leadership and concerns about winners in the team, and also about, you know, a little bit of complacency, and then there's the obvious ones about the goalkeeper as well. And so when we were winning,
talking about that length in a couple of minutes.
So when you're winning, you kind of forget about that and think, oh, everything's going to be fine. But you know, I was just really concerned watching that West Ham game in terms of how they reacted when they went 1-0. They just thought, oh, this is easy, this, we'll just coast through this. And then when West Ham started playing a bit better, they didn't seem to know how to react to it.
That's 2 or 3 weeks in a row that's happened.
Yeah, exactly, and it's a concern, really. And it shows to me that there's not enough leaders on the pitch, really, and there's not enough people just to give someone a bit of a rollicking, you know, and just to say, come on, this isn't good, you know, we need to sharpen up here. And they're all just kind of, I don't know, like, just seem to be going through the motions is maybe the wrong way, because I think they are putting effort in. I just don't think it's the right sort of effort all the time, really, and there's not enough steel in the team. And we thought that in the summer. You said, well, you know, is it just a little bit young? Is it a little bit nicer? But when they're playing great, you say, oh, you know, it's all fine. But when they're not, I don't know, because you can't play 100 miles an hour all the time. Everyone says, oh, the tempo drops, and it does. The tempo did drop, but you should be able to manage a game of ball, don't you think, Sangi? And you should be able to manage a game of football and think, okay, well, we'll get it 1-0 up after 5 minutes. Perfect start. That's what you always say against poor opposition. And that's what they are, West Ham. That's where they are on the table. An early goal. That's brilliant. That's exactly what you want. And then you think, oh, you should be able to manage this game now. 2-3-0. You know, nice. You know, play at 80%, because there's a lot of football coming up, and you should be able to do that. And this football team seems to be great when they're all 100% flying around. But you can't do that every week, and you can't do it for a whole game. And they just don't seem to know how to play sensibly.
Here's one for you then. Neil Sang, football agent. Taking everything into account that Gibbo said, and Gibbo said it last week, or the last time he was on, and it was said last week on this very show about, we need somebody, right, in that moment, when you're leading, put the foot on the ball and lead the thing, right? Steven Gerrard's not doing anything at the moment. I'm just throwing it out there. I feel as a responsible broadcaster, I have to bring it up, right? And I agree with every point you made there. Yeah. It is genuinely just that little bit of nous, little bit of steel, that little bit of hold on a second, we're 1-0 up here, the game isn't done. And I think what Philippe Coutinho does, he's so fast, so much of a trick merchant, that he doesn't give the opposition time to settle on the ball, and therefore you don't need that. You don't need that person to go, right, whoa, let's settle ourselves here. Steven Gerrard, 20 minutes in the game, 20 minutes to go. Neil Sang, you're a football agent. You know what it's like to get somebody in there sort of at the last minute to sort problems out. What do you say?
I would say if I represented Steven Gerrard, I would not make that call, because I'd get the phone slammed down. He's had his day, hasn't he? And I think, because when you said it, I'm thinking, well, what would he bring? So my little brain's working. What does he bring? Could he add the skills or qualities that Liverpool don't have? And the only one I could think of was leadership. But leadership can come from the side. That can come from Jurgen Klopp. You know, that organisation, you know, he constantly barks, whereas his oppo across the park generally sits there. People construe that as him not being bothered. I actually think he's really bothered. I just think that's his choice to do that, let the players work it out. Jurgen Klopp is that leader. So what does Gerrard bring? Jordan Henderson, England international and current captain, needs to do more for me in that regard. Okay. But if Liverpool could make a change, I would change maybe an Emre Can for somebody like, I don't know, I mean, listen, they won't sell him now, but somebody like a Wanyama type who's got an absolute, you know, a tackle and a heart. He can absolutely nail somebody. Liverpool don't quite have that, and I think they need a little bit of that.
Right, well, Paddy Boylan from the Blue Room here, representing the blue side of Merseyside. So say it happens next Monday. The derby's on, okay? It's the same situation as Liverpool were in last evening. It's 2-2. Liverpool have conceded two very stupid, sloppy goals. Oh, my word, we'll talk about the goalkeeper in a minute, right? And you know Steven Gerrard's coming on for the last 20 minutes. What do you think? Just completely, as an Everton fan, what do you think?
As an Evertonian, and therefore slightly pessimistic in outlook when it comes to derbies, I would expect Gerrard to come on and win the game for Liverpool. But that's not to say that he's the answer either in the short or the long term. I mean, he certainly won't be in the long term. Maybe we're coming up to January now. Maybe this is an area with the soft belly slightly exposed. Maybe this is an area where Klopp will look to delve into the market in January.
Yeah, it's starting to feel that way. It really is. But listen, we'll be back in a second. Going to be talking about Lloris Karius at length, all right? So strap yourselves in, or just strap your goalkeeping gloves in. We're going to do that in a second, right? Keep thinking on this as well. There are only four players who have won consecutive Champions League titles. Who have we got? Samuel Eto'o was one. And I did tell you there may be a Juve Dortmund link from 96 and 97, okay? And all I'm going to say now going into the break is Portugal, all right? So have a little think. We'll be back with you. Keep thinking. Get amongst it. We'll do it after the traffic and travel.
Full time with Connor Phillips. With the Heating and Bathroom Centre. From boiler to complete bathroom installation, they do it all.
Radio City Talk, this is full time. We are all in the game. It's like a football match shoved into the middle of a radio show every single Monday evening. Just a heads up for any parents who are listening, right? If you've three kids, for example, and you would like those three kids to stop, if they're making noise in the back of the car now, and you'd like them to be absolutely silent for about 15 minutes, just ask them the question, who are the four players who've won consecutive Champions League titles? Because I haven't heard a peep out of John Gibbons from the Anfield Rap, Neil Sang, football agent, and also Paddy Boylan from the Blue Room, lads. What are you thinking? So, right, there are only four players who've won consecutive Champions League titles. We bring this to you on or during the week where the Champions League draw has been made. It is going to be Manchester City, Monaco, it's going to be Leicester, Sevilla, and it's going to be Munich against Arsenal. Give us the names you have in there so far.
Well, we've got Samuel Eto'o, which you've said is right, where he went from Inter Milan to Barca.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Paulo Sousa, which was a Gibbo shout, right out the top draw from Juventus. He won it in 96 and won it in 97 with Borussia Dortmund.
Okay.
And we're also thinking Deco, who won it with Barca in 2011 and then Chelsea in 2012.
Okay.
We're going to pass on. We thought Beckham, we had Beckham in the mix. We've had
Robin
in the mix, but we're going to hold off. We think Deco, Sousa and Eto'o are nailed on.
Okay, Eto'o, nailed on. Paulo Sousa, great shout, Gibbo. Deco, not happening.
It's naughty.
Right, Tom.
Beckham was on the list, though.
Thank you, Tom Blees. Tom sent me a message. He says, got to be Luis Figo.
No, we don't think so.
We don't think so, because there's no links.
No.
I was thinking maybe about PK. Was PK at Man United in 2008? Gerard PK?
Could have been. That's a good chat.
Was he?
Connor? Yeah, but he didn't hardly play.
No, he wouldn't have got
because he was sold as a young lad.
So, back up there, what does that mean?
Wouldn't have got a medal.
Sure?
Wouldn't have got a medal.
No, I'm not sure.
Nailed it.
Really?
Gerard Piqué is 3 out of 4. Well,
tell you what, boys.
Sir.
You need to pull your finger out to the left here. Carrying this team.
Absolutely nailed it. So you have got Paulo Sousa. You have got Gerard Piqué, who played for Manchester United and Barcelona and has indeed got a medal from the Manchester United winning night. That night then went off.
He's robbed that medal.
Right. So listen, the medal's a medal. Andrew's just got on. He says, is it Clarence Seedorf? You have muted that in the last wee while. No, it's not Clarence Seedorf. Right. Okay, we'll see how hard it gets. I'm going to throw out a few clues in the next couple of minutes. You have one left to get, right? So if we can just step aside, sashay to the left ever so slightly from this question. Keep thinking, but keep tweeting at Radio City Talk. Let me know what you're thinking. Let's talk about Lloris Karius, okay? I've been kind of, every time I've watched Karius play, I've saved up a little sentence in my head that I knew I was going to say in this radio show at some stages, right? Because radio presenters will go throughout their day thinking, oh, maybe say that on the radio. Oh, maybe say that on the radio. Okay, this is a sentence I've been rehearsing for the last couple of weeks, okay? When are we starting to get rid of this Karius nonsense, put Mignolet back in between the sticks, and at least get back to some semblance of normality? Discuss.
Well, I'd do it now, personally. I think, I don't know why they rushed to bring him in. I don't... As soon as he saw him, that Swansea game was the first time I saw him in a league game, and I just thought, I'm not sure about this fellow. I'm not sure. He doesn't look ready. And people are saying he's young, he's new to the country, he's new to the style of football. Okay, we'll just play him in the cups then. I thought Mignolet was doing all right at the start of the season. I thought he was doing fine, and I think the defence looked like they had a bit more confidence in him than in the past. And I think they've made themselves a problem. I think Liverpool Football Club
run for their own back to it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. By forcing, and then you see. I mean, the press conference has been this morning for the Middlesbrough game on Wednesday. Jürgen Klopp, and he's answering loads of questions about Karius. You know, Karius is doing interviews, trying to stick up for himself, and then as soon as he did that on Friday, I thought he's going to make an error now at the weekend. Because you've seen it so many times, haven't you? And he does that now.
But it's not an error. This is my situation, and I said this last week on the show. It's not an error, right? I don't see the positives. Okay, the free kick. Right. Although Darren Randolph didn't really cover himself in glory late in the game, so it just goes to show goalkeepers are not always blameless. The free kick, it's 50, 60, 70, so I'll go say 75% of goalkeepers in the Premier League claw that away.
Yeah.
Right. The other goal, he's solid. Your job is to go approach the striker and make him make the decision, right? Go down, make him try and chip it over you. Don't stand there like a statue. To me, he hasn't done enough right, never mind the wrong stuff, if that makes any sense. Sangi, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And the fact that he's a young goalkeeper, to me, bears no sort of excuse for him.
Even from an agent's perspective?
No, none at all. You're playing for Liverpool Football Club. You've been bought for £5 million. You're 24. You've played hundreds of thousands of times in your life. You should be ready. If Jürgen Klopp's putting him in, Jürgen Klopp sees something. But you're right, Connor. There's the thing for me is, and I think Carragher said it in one of the post-match discussions that they had. There's not been one thing that I've seen where I've gone, wow. Mm. Stekelenburg makes an incredible save round the post from a Brito Seder on Saturday. Just a ridiculous save. So as an Evertonian...
And it's 2 weeks in a row, he's made amazing saves. See what you like about him. The other one that was behind him, I think it was was it Austin?
Yeah, that was an unbelievable save.
He thought
he was on target. He even went... How the bleep did he do that?
Exactly. Now, any Evertonian will look at Stekelenburg and go, not sure, but you know what? I cling to the fact that he's got a couple of worldies in his locker. Liverpool fans are looking at Carragher going, what has he got? He's not Schmeichel-esque, doesn't come in command. He was rooted to the spot against the other. I mean, you know, just the basic goalkeeper things, to be on your toes and ready. As soon as he sees that full-back shape to hit that pass, and then it loops, so it takes X more seconds to get there to still be rooted. And, you know, Klopp says, oh, Matip should have maybe dealt with it. Yeah, but Matip didn't deal with it. Your job's to be ready. So there's nothing that I see, unfortunately, that I think he could turn this around. You know, and I think Carragher again mentioned De Gea. Well, De Gea was 19. Paddy, this kid's 24.
Paddy, what do you make of this fact that Jurgen Klopp has mentioned Gary Neville, Phil Neville, or the Neville brothers? It was very good. It was almost like, you know, they were characters from Nintendo. Yeah. The Neville brothers. Yeah. That they shouldn't know, they wouldn't know too much about criticism, etc., etc. Gary showed, the other one he called him, showed he struggled to judge players in his previous job. This whole ex-players being part of the media, it's great fun sometimes, but there is a whole pile of times you're just going to everybody involved, would you just shut up? You weren't immune to mistakes yourself, and I include Carragher in that.
Yeah, but the thing with this is, the two Neville brothers, as far as I can see, are paid to give their opinion. Now, whether they should be allowed to do that on Liverpool games is another matter, as former Man United players. But I don't actually think the criticism of Carragher, the things that they said were too far wrong, as far as I can see at least. Klopp's got a decision to make, really, hasn't he? Because he's just brought this lad in, and he was meant to use Mignolet, clearly, as the long-term number one. But he's costing Liverpool points now, more or less on a regular basis. And what are they now, 6 points behind? Five or six behind Chelsea at the top of the league? And you're getting very close to the stage where you think, okay, Liverpool's title six challenges is basically written off, aren't you? So a decision has to be made. I think it calls for strong judgment here, and I would take him out of the firing line and look to bring in somebody else.
His issue, Connor, is though that the club's nailed him on as his number one.
Yeah.
You know, do that in your own head, but maybe don't
tell everyone.
Yeah, that's.
But then he was asked. It's the same thing you said there, Paddy. He was the journalist asked, said, "Look, is he your number one?" I think are you clever there, John? If you just go, actually, I don't have a number one. Whoever's playing the best
for now.
Time.
Yeah. For now, he's going to get run on the side. For now, let's see how he goes. Let's battle it out.
You wouldn't do that in any other position, wouldn't you? You wouldn't say, well, is Daniel Sturridge your number nine? You know, you wouldn't do that. Where you'd say, well, it depends on the day, it depends on the opposition. So
definitely.
I don't see. I think, as I say, they've made it up for their own back, but just to this thing about, you know, the Neville brothers, it's, you know, it's easy to do, isn't it? And Liverpool fans enjoy it. Oh, he's sticking it to the Manx and stuff like that. But you can't just ignore that he's been poor. You know, you can't just say, oh, we'll tell them all to shut up. When you've got Bournemouth players coming out and saying, well, we targeted them as a weak link, it's a problem. And it's a problem. When you've got the Liverpool defenders, the team don't seem to fancy him. You know, they're shouting at him in games and stuff like that. And, you know, you saw, I think that was part of the problem. You know, I'm having to go with them for leadership and things like that at 1-1. And, you know, I think justified. But there must be a little bit of it where they're thinking, well, how many have we got to score today? Because this fella just keeps letting them in. And, you know, we've just been to Bournemouth and scored 3 and we can't even get a point. And now suddenly, first shot on target from West Ham, 30 yards, free kick. Not a brilliant free kick.
Not a brilliant free kick.
It goes in.
They must
be thinking, okay, this fella, it doesn't matter how many we score with this
fella. Before we go to news, you are looking very wonderful and beautiful on the internet the other day. Dedicated your award, you gave your award, Radio Show of the Year, to Jurgen Klopp. You got to meet him the other day.
Yes.
Either that was done, that was really good Photoshop. I thought it was Photoshop for a while.
No, it was real.
So, say for example, you got the opportunity to do that tomorrow. Does he have your award? Did you give it to him?
We give him Philip Coutinho one player of the year at the same award, so we give him that one.
Right, so if you were doing this tomorrow and then the journalist down there said, actually, you can sit down and have a chat with Jurgen if you want to give him any advice, feel go. So give it a rattle. You have 25 seconds to talk to Jurgen Klopp. Go.
He's very intimidating, I'll say. Start with that. But maybe ask him, look, what do you see in Karius? Because
you're giving him advice, not asking him questions. You're giving him advice for 25 seconds, and we've got to take the news, so you have them now.
I just say, take him off the fine line. I think Mignolet's done really well in the past when he's lost his place and come back in. I think he lost his place to Brad Jones a year or so ago, and Dachi did really well to come in. I'd say go with the dependable fella for now, work on Karius in the cups and see if he can make some saves in under-23s and just get a bit of confidence.
Is that Brad Jones, who's, according to Twitter, the best goalkeeper in Holland?
Dutch goalkeeper of the year.
There you go.
Wow.
Right, keep your suggestions coming in for this one. We have one more to get. It is the Champions League draw has been made, so the only 4 players who have won successive Champions League titles, and the bit of a clue was the fact that they did it at different clubs. Paulo Sousa has been guessed, Gerard Pique has been guessed, Samuel Eto'o has been guessed. I think it's all by Gibbo. So Neil Sang, football agent, get your head screwed on. Paddy Boylan from the Blue Room, get your head screwed on, and we'll do more after this.
Full time with Connor Phillips, with the Heating and Bathroom Centre. From boiler to complete bathroom installation, they do it all.
Studio City Talk. It is 6:02. I'm Connor Phillips, and this afternoon into this evening we are all in the game. It is 90 minutes of solid football chat with some of the best footballing experts from around Merseyside and beyond. They weren't available this evening, so I am joined by
remember before when Connor said he was going to be nice?
Yeah.
And then he's just been audible ever since.
Joined by John Gibbons from the multi award winning Anfield Rap podcast, website and beyond. Neil Sang, football expert and indeed football agent and football writer, blogger, and from the Blue Room here on Radio City Talk, Paddy Boylan joins me. Paddy always gives me that wee nod of, thanks very much for that. Thank you. You two guys, been here far too long. You stopped doing that some time ago. Right, in a second, we'll be discussing the rest of the Premier League. We've already covered Liverpool. We've covered Everton at length as well. Let's go Leicester, Chelsea, Southampton, the Champions League draw, all that coming up. Are Arsenal a big team? And is the league's Chelsea to lose now? We'll talk about that in a wee second. But a couple of seconds ago, or at the very start of the show, I brought you this question. There are only 4 players who have won consecutive Champions League titles, right? You got Paulo Sousa, who moved from Juventus to Borussia Dortmund between 96 and 97. That was correct. You also got Gerard Pique, who moved from Manchester United to Barcelona. He won a medal. And Samuel Eto'o won 2 medals with Barcelona and Inter Milan. Paddy Boylan, I have scribbled down some extra teams. I've gone back a few years. So what they've done is they've listed down all the Champions League winners of the last, 20 plus years. Yeah. So I've given you 95, 94, 93, 92 and 91. Sangi, what is your thoughts on this? There's one player who's played for some of those teams, right? Between 95 back to 91, and one of them won consecutive Champions League titles. That's your clue.
Am I right with these two? Yeah.
What are those two?
Red Star Belgrade.
And Barcelona.
And Barcelona.
It's radio, they can't read it.
No, just for you to give a nod.
Okay.
Then I would have let the listeners know.
So do you think of somebody who played for Red Star Belgrade and then moved to Barcelona in 82?
Yeah.
No.
I think it's that Ajax team.
Marseille.
Ajax to Juve or Milan to Ajax.
I'm not sure, but that Ajax team was brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, it was so good. So I think
whoever. Clivert.
Didn't go to Juve.
All I would say is
Van Basten.
Paddy Boylan has been pointing and talking about one particular team over the last couple of seconds, and none of you have listened to him.
Right? Marseille to Milan.
The silence should tell you it all. Okay.
Oh, was it
George Weah?
Jean-Pierre Papin?
No, it's not. You're in the right ballpark.
Oh, we're buzzing. So it's Marseille, Milan.
You've got the right nationality as well.
He's French. Is it Bourbon or something?
Desailly.
No. What was that? Whoa! A second. Hold up there.
Yes. John go Gibbons, on, Paddy.
John Gibbons gave me 97 different answers there earlier on. Paddy Boylan was sort of floating around, hovering around that Marseille right the way out the break in the news there. Paddy Boylan, you can give me your answer one more time.
Is it Marcel Desailly?
Winning the Champions League with Marseille, moving to AC Milan, and then winning the Champions League again. That is all four, ladies and gentlemen. The first time they've gone all four. I don't know
what you've done. What a footballer, eh?
Marcel Desailly moves to Marseille to Milan, wins two Champions Leagues. Paulo Sousa went Juve to Dortmund, won two Champions Leagues. Gerard Piqué, despite the fact he hadn't got much to do with Manchester United side, you guessed that one quite early, Manchester United to Barcelona, and Samuel Eto'o, Barcelona to Inter Milan, on the week that the Champions League draw has been made. And what a beautiful tie-in it is, as I'm about to talk to that draw. First of all, well done, lads, congratulations. The prize is my unending love and a hug before you leave the building. Alright,
even with my gloves on.
Oh, especially with your gloves on. Especially with your gloves on. Anyway, we'll move on. The Champions League draw, Manchester City taking on Monaco, Sevilla taking on Leicester, Bayern Munich taking on Arsenal. Obviously Arsenal getting the tougher of those, and have left Leicester kind of, if they want. I know Liverpool know all about this, but it's not that it's a gimme, but the lady luck of European football seems to smile on them again.
Leicester,
it's a great draw, I think.
It's a nice draw, I think, but Sevilla, I mean, we saw how good they are at European football. They seem to concentrate on it. They seem to focus on it, really. I think the seventh in the league, was it? Well, last season anyway, but you can't read too much in that. They were so impressive against us. I thought, yeah, we threw it away a little bit, but still, they were just very impressive. And I think they just seem to know what they're doing in European football. I think they see it as a bit of a showcase for the football club, really, and it's how their success has been built and how their business model's built as well. So I think it's a tough one for Leicester, but hey, it'll be fun. It'll be a bit of sun for them as well. Nice all round sun, Sevilla. So it's brilliant for them, isn't it? I'm sure they're really enjoying it. And who knows? It could have been a lot worse.
Paddy Boylan from the Blue Room, would they have liked a bigger game a little bit earlier in this competition? Potentially one of the big teams like a Bayern Munich.
Well, it depends what you're in the competition for, really, doesn't it? I know some Leicester City fans were hoping to draw a huge team in the group stage, but I would agree here with Gibbo. I think it's a really difficult game for Leicester. It's Sevilla aren't a big gun. They're not one of the Europe kind of European elite. But under Sampaoli, they've got this kind of all energy, kind of high pressing system, and that could cause Leicester some real problems. For me, they're like Leicester, but with better players.
What a great shot!
I see the two kind of in the same vein, really. And Sevilla, for me, start as favourites. They're doing very well in La Liga. They're notoriously difficult to beat at the Santos Pizjuan, which is a terrible place to go for opposing teams. And the only thing you can say, really, is that it's a lovely city. Been myself, I really, really enjoyed it.
Beautiful city to go back. Did you go on your own?
No, didn't win. Went with my girlfriend, big Game of Thrones fan, so it was good to see.
I reckon there's a bridge. There's a bridge somewhere where you have a little lock and you've locked it on the bridge and you've written your name and her.
You've got me as a sentimentalist. I'm just absolutely not.
You're just a mentalist.
Right. I think it's a good one for Leicester. Me, I'll tell you why. I don't think Leicester's players will know too much about Sevilla's players. If you said to Jamie Vardy, name three players on their in their squad, I don't think he could. And I think that serves Leicester big time. I think if they were drawn against, but it's a difficult game. I just think it serves them better in that small point. If they play against a Barca, a Real, a Bayern Munich, whoever, they go, potentially. They go, look who we're playing against. And that could arguably demotivate you or squash your spirit. With Sevilla, it's like, who are they? You know, we're Leicester, we've just won the league, we've got all... we're not bothered. Yeah, and listen, we all know, and they'll all know, it's a difficult game, but prior to analysis and all their pre-match build-up, they'll be fancying that, trust me.
Right.
Lots to be said for that.
Let's have a little look at Manchester City against Monaco now. I suppose if that draw had...
Cakewalk.
No, not a chance. I don't think
cakewalk.
So. Had that have been made, two or three years ago, Manchester City would have went, right, not a problem, right, we're going to go for this. Monaco are playing all right. They're scoring goals. They're unearthing two or three youngsters that nobody thought they could do this. A couple of years ago, it was all about Falcao. He disappeared. He's back again. He's scoring goals again as well. I don't know. I think City should be careful. And look at the way City are playing at the moment.
Mario Balotelli scoring goals in that league, you know what I mean? You can't take it too seriously if Mario Balotelli's managing to get goals there. I think it's an easy one. I'm with Sangi. The only thing that, you know, the City might have to worry about complacency or something like that. Yeah. But over two legs as well, you know what I mean? They're not going to play badly twice in that tie. So, no, I think they'll be absolutely fine. I imagine to win both games.
I think City will win over the two legs. But Monaco are a decent team. They've already beaten Spurs at Wembley, haven't they? I know that doesn't say a lot because Spurs are dreadful there. Their record is awful. But they've got some very good young players. Some really good young players in Thomas Lemar and Bernardo Silva. It's one of those games. Sangi's just mentioned there, Leicester maybe, if they played somebody like a Barcelona, Barca might have taken them for granted. Maybe the same will happen here, in a sense. But City's point of view, they might think, okay, we've avoided the real big guns. It's only Monaco. We'll breeze through this. And I absolutely don't think that will be the case. Monaco are being very good in Ligue 1 for what it's worth. So not as straightforward as it may look on first glance.
Right. I suspect that will be the same. Just a very quick word on Bayern Munich against Arsenal. When you talk about the Arsenal side that got to the Champions League final, what was it, 2006? Am I right, 2007?
Around then.
They had a similar run in the group. Then they had to go out and beat a big gun early on, and that gave them the motivation and the platform to spring on. I don't know. They're playing well at the moment. They're right up in the league. Sanchez is playing well. Even Giroud, when he comes on, he's got a great goals-to-minute ratio. It's maybe quite an evenly matched tie.
I think it'll be really interesting to see how well they do, because it's a big test of the Premier League, isn't it? And it's a big test for Arsenal. I think people are still waiting to write this Arsenal team off, and they just do look like they've got a bit more steel about them this year. There's a bit more about something, and they keep winning games and winning well, you know, scoring
and
goals.
From behind as well. They've gone behind like so two or three times over the last couple of weeks.
It's definitely, Connor. So I think it'll be an interesting test to see where they are. Bayern Munich, you know, they're not top in Germany. They're used to having things their own way over there. There's obviously a new team in that league at the moment, you know, surprising everyone who were top. And so so they're not really having everything their own way at the moment. There's worse times, I think, to play Bayern at the moment, and so I think everyone just assumes that, you know, you see Bayern Munich or Arsenal, you know, we know how that one's going to go, but I think they might be a little bit surprised.
Right, let's head back to the league from the weekend. We might as well talk about the aforementioned Arsenal side as well. 1-0 down against Stoke, a Stoke side who can be resolute, have got a good record. I think it was only Chelsea and Liverpool have a better record than them in the last nine games. Decent result, or decent start by Stoke, but Stoke being Stoke, or Arsenal being Arsenal, they genuinely could be right up there.
Yeah.
When they go toe-to-toe with Chelsea, if they can get a result against Chelsea in any of those games, it's going to get very interesting.
They just keep winning and keep winning in different ways, I think, Paddy, which is like an impressive thing about it.
Yeah. I think that the one thing for me that will probably stop them from winning the title is the fact that they are so reliant on Alexis Sanchez up front. If he drops out, Olivier Giroud is a decent striker, though, don't get me wrong, but Sanchez is that X factor in the team, and I think if he gets an injury, a bit like Everton with Lukaku, really, you don't see where the goals are going to come from apart from that.
Can you not say the same about every side? Like, I'm looking here, Chelsea beat West Brom 1-0, Chelsea lose Diego Costa, the wheels fall off. We said it a couple of weeks ago, Liverpool, if they lose Philippe Coutinho, could go all wrong for them, and Liverpool picked up 1 point in two games since Philippe Coutinho was out of the side.
Yeah, I suppose you could do. I just think it's even more the case with Arsenal, and also there's this belief that's set in over the last few years that Arsenal, when it comes down to it, just won't be able to muddle through. Now, I don't know if it's quite like that this season. They seem to be more solid in the middle of the park, but to me, Chelsea are the favourites. Chelsea are the favourites. They're the ones I look at and think that game against West Brom was really quite difficult, because West Brom, it was effectively a back six. It was a really, it was Pulis ball in essence. And they seemed to be the ones, when we came up against them, they just annihilated us. We were poor on the day, but they annihilated us. And they, to me, are the clear title favourites.
OK, well, that's Chelsea against West Brom out of the way. Are Manchester United, Gibbo, going to sneak up the back door? Do you think your colleague, Neil Atkinson, seems to think that there is a top four in them? I watched them at length. I was lucky enough to sit down with Nicky Butt over the weekend and interview him about this. And he said, look, if people have a little bit more patience than, well, any other team in the Premier League, he could get this right. Now, he's starting to ground out results. We've said on this show in the last couple of weeks that they have been playing well. The problem was getting the result. And on Sunday, they proved they could do that. And to be honest with you, I don't think David De Gea broke sweat apart from saving one free kick.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's stuff like this is always interesting to talk to fans and see what they think, because, me as a Liverpool fan, I could say, oh, well, Everton will turn it round. You know, maybe they've looked a bit unlucky and things like that. But you speak to Evertonians and they actually say, no, we're in real trouble at the moment. We really do need something. And I was speaking to when we went down to those FSF Awards last week that we brought it over Radio City Talk for. When I was talking to Man United fans there, they were like, we're doing all right, you know. Like, and I was expecting them to be all doom and gloom and, oh, is he going to get the sack and all this? And they were like, we're doing all right, you know, we're playing okay. And it's actually quite enjoyable to watch us at the moment. Maybe that's because, you know, the Van Gaal Moyes thing that they've had to put up with. But so it was interesting. So I wasn't that surprised that they got the win at the weekend that they did. Can they get top four? They can, but I just think they've given themselves a little bit too much to do. You know, it's a 9-point gap now, and I think if you look at the teams who are in the top four, I mean, Arsenal and Chelsea aren't going anywhere.
I think 6 points off the top four.
Six is it?
Six now. So, you know, think about it. Like, Liverpool were flying. Liverpool 2 weeks ago were top of the league. Now they're 6 points off Chelsea.
I think Liverpool will be okay for top four, though. I think we'll turn it around once you start getting players back and just sorting ourselves out a little bit more. And I think, you know, the lack of European football, you know, you've got Manchester United back into the Europa League. I think they look like they want to have a little bit of a go at it. And I think Liverpool having that clear run, I'd expect Liverpool to pick up more points than Manchester United between now and the end of the season, never mind the 6 point gap.
Paddy Boylan using the same fixture. Let's have a quick chat about Spurs. It all seemed to be going relatively okay for them. They hadn't lost, then they went out of the Champions League. They have to travel to places like Clostadio Monfabio on a Thursday evening now in the Europa League, and then they have to see if they can maintain some sort of run to the end of the season. Now their stadium's going to get knocked down, there's a bit of unrest with that. And now they've lost two Premier League games in the bounce.
Yeah, and you kind of get the sense that for Spurs, at least, they're in a really tricky spell, aren't they? And the one thing I look at, I again, if Kane gets injured, they seem to lack a focal point. But also, they've had an issue with creativity. They brought in Moussa Sissoko, who...
It's been very disappointing.
He's been hugely disappointing, and I thought we ourselves dodged the bullet, Everton, when we missed out on him.
David Downey said that in the Blue Room and said it in the show last week. Although I agree with what you're saying there, he was probably Spurs' most impressive player on Sunday. He did seem that somebody has put a rocket up his backside. He was probably their most... In a similar way that I mentioned Gerard Deulofeu earlier on, yes, energy, getting the crosses in, and he was playing in a similar sort of position, actually. And yeah, he may have hit the first man a few times, but I don't know. I think he could definitely improve the Everton side. I think that's a little bit harsh on him.
To me, he's being played out of position. I don't see him as a winger, and what I mean by that is Deulofeu beats a few men. And yeah, his crossing was pretty poor on Saturday, but overall, that's one of his real strengths. Sissoko, for me, has never done that well. And will continue to underperform.
I've seen him as a holding midfielder.
If he does that. He's a box-to-box midfielder. If we're using the kind of European system, he's a number eight, isn't he? He's certainly not a winger, and I don't like playing him wide right. I know France used it to some effect over the summer.
That was part of the problem, wasn't it? He was in that France team, but he was happy to do a job because it was, you know, home tournaments and things like that. And I think people saw him in that and thought, well, that's his kind of natural game. And really, he was just, you know, high on life, wasn't he? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Are they missing an Andros Townsend character?
Possibly. I think it's a bit of a belief thing with Tottenham. I think they still got that attitude where they go to Manchester United and think...
Here's a quick one for you. Right, how many times have Spurs been beaten by Manchester United at Old Trafford since the Premier League started?
15.
Keep going.
20.
20.
Wow.
2-0.
I mean, that's appalling, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I kind of put them in the same category as Everton. I know they're doing much better on the pitch at the moment, but what I mean by that is I think there's a complex, yeah. Especially when you go to some of these grounds, Old Trafford, Anfield, especially for Everton, where you don't feel like you completely belong. You're not on the same platform, and that'll take a few years, I think, for Spurs to completely get rid of.
Right, I want to look at this one because this blew everybody away. We spoke a little minute ago, a little bit about Leicester, who are going to be facing Sevilla in the Champions League. Leicester 4, Manchester City 2. Yeah. Okay, we take Philippe Coutinho out of the Liverpool side, we have a bit of a blip. You take Sergio Aguero out of the Manchester City side, that's not a bit of a blip. They were woeful.
I think Fernandinho is just as big as Sergio Aguero for him. I think he's absolutely brilliant, and I don't think they've got a like-for-like replacement
for
him.
How long is he for two games?
I'm not sure what his ban was, but I think he's a big blow for them. But I just think for Leicester, getting Vardy back scoring is absolutely massive for him. And I speak as a man who left him on the bench in his fantasy football team. Absolutely distraught as he is. He walloping goal after goal in. But, you know, that's huge for him because he's been really disappointing this season so far. It just kind of hasn't quite been happening for him. If that gets his confidence going again, then they'll feel they can rocket up the table and maybe even do a bit in the Champions League too.
Aren't Manchester City in danger of kind of doing what Spurs did there as well? Manchester City losing a couple of games now on the bounce. Celtic 1, Manchester City 1. They weren't the most inspired side. Pep being a bit grumpy and sultry. Yeah. It just has kind of turned a weird corner for Manchester City. We really don't know what Man City's going to turn up.
Yeah, and there's this weird fascination with Guardiola and everything he does. And I remember seeing a few tweets on social media before the Chelsea game, and it was praising the fact that he completely changed his system. And it was like, oh, he's playing a 3-4-1-2 or whatever it was at the time. And I was like, well, surely the proof's in the pudding here. Let's see how they get on. Whatever he does apparently just turns to gold. He's Midas or whatever for some people. And yet he seems to be tinkering with the team. They're still so reliant, as you've said there, Gibbo, on Fernandinho. He's the glue that knits the rest of that team together, isn't he? They've got so many supremely gifted attacking midfielders, De Bruyne and Silva and even Sterling, I guess. And yet, when they're missing that defensive midfielder, it all seems to fall to pass. And he's a bigger miss, I agree, than Aguero. Yeah.
Again, interested to speak to City fans on this. They just feel like, you know, they're obviously still made up to Pep Guardiola's there, but they just feel like he's doing a little bit too much. You know, there's too many changes, there's too much tinkering, there's too much changing of formation, and they just like to see a bit of a settled way of playing for a while, and a bit of a settled way that gets the best out of certain players. And I think at the moment the players look a bit confused. The players look like they're not completely sure about what's being asked of them and things like that. Look, he's going to come good, Pep Guardiola.
Where did they finish?
I think probably third, but I think they'll have a good run in the Champions League. I think they might get to semi-finals of the Champions League.
Paddy?
Yeah, third or fourth. I think they'll be around the same sort of place as Liverpool, to be honest.
Right, time will tell on that one. Feel free to give us your shout on this, 01517 08 1059. Hull 3, Crystal Palace 3. Another week goes by and another Saturday afternoon sitting in this seat nearly losing my voice because of the way in which Crystal Palace are playing.
I listened to you on Saturday, Connor. You were very good.
Thanks very much. I'm blushing. But it was like, it's 3-3. I was sitting there going, right, so what was it? Hull take a 1-0 lead.
Yeah.
Palace equalise. Hull go 2-1 up. Oh, I'll tell you what, I'll read it directly off the website in front of me. Yes, here we go.
Yeah, 2-1 and then Palace go 3-2.
So Hull take the lead with Snodgrass. Then Benteke and Zaha score to put Palace 2-1 up. Then Diamande puts Hull all square and 2-2. Livermore scores his first goal in 988 years to give them a 3-2 win. And then Fraser Campbell, do you remember him?
Yeah.
Comes out of the woodwork in 89 minutes. I'm starting to feel sorry for Alan Pardew. He mustn't be sleeping very well after this.
I mean, the quality of some of the goals as well. Obviously, the first two are penalties and one of them a bit of a dive. But after that, you know, the quality of some of the goals. And I think it just shows like how good these footballers are, really. And I think sometimes we can say, oh, you know, hold on, they haven't got any quality and stuff. But I think the defending they're coming up against is so strong normally that when it's a bit of an open game, I think some of these players can really show the quality. And Zaha was obviously thought about a couple of years ago as someone who's going to be a big star, and hasn't necessarily happened for him. But that doesn't mean it won't. It could have just been a little bump in the road for him. And just absolutely brilliant goals. And it was just really fun to watch because obviously you haven't got any kind of emotional ties in. in it really and stuff.
It's
and,
good that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I do like when those games are on.
Oh, yeah. And they're just battering the hell out of each other. And it does feel like this season, I don't know what you guys think, but it feels like teams are going for the win a bit more this season. And I think both teams were trying to win that game of football, and it was great to watch. I think they both realised, well, there's only so many times you'll have an opportunity. If your whole, you know, home games, you want to be winning them. But Palace are looking at that, and this is one we need 3 points from. And so I think teams are maybe, I don't know if realise is the wrong way, but thinking, well, you know, if you draw too many games, then you've had it. And so I think more teams, to me, seem to be going for the win, and it's very entertaining if you're listening to Conor on a Saturday.
But seriously, if you're a Palace fan, right, hello, good afternoon to you. Thank you for joining us. We want to hug you. Right, but at the same time, like, you must be losing your head week after week after week. Just, I don't know, we've only got a couple of seconds left, but does Pardew finish the season out? No matter what happens here, right? It's just so all over the show.
I guess it depends what Crystal Palace's ultimate aim is, really. Yeah. Alan
what
Pardew.
Is that?
Well, this is the thing that, in a traditional sense, they're not a big Premier League club. At least no. I don't associate them with. They don't have a big fan base. They don't have a long storied history like a Liverpool, Everton, Man United, any of those other teams. And Pardew seems to be one of those managers who puts runs together of real excellence 1 minute, and then they just bomb the next. Surely with a defence containing Scott Dan and Damien Delaney, two experienced Premier League pros that have done it year in, year out, surely they shouldn't be leaking this many goals.
Maybe the facial hair is just getting in their eyes. Right, Swansea City 3-0 winners over Sunderland. Very quick question. Who loses the job first, Bradley or Moyes? Call it.
Moyes.
Paddy?
Bradley.
Oh, I like it. Interesting differential here on Radio City Talk. Listen, lads, thank you so much. Thank you to Neil Sang, football agent, for joining me. We've John Gibbons from the multi award-winning Anfield Rap. Get yourself onto anfieldrap.com. Search for The Blue Room on iTunes. It's there. You can listen to Paddy and his colleagues.
Radio City Talk.
This is Full Time.